Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
As always, we thank folks for listening to this program and to American Family Radio. And a lot to talk about today with Kirby Anderson joining us from Dallas TX. Kirby is the president of Pro Ministries. He's also the host of the daily program Point of View, which is the longest-running Christian talk radio program in America. And
In America.
Kirby's the host daily on that program. It's heard on American Family Radio in the evenings and all across the country. Kirby, how you doing?
I'm doing well. America.
America. I got that from George W., I think.
George W., America.
It's America.
Nuclear.
Hey, did you see at the memorial service, Kirby?
Oh, sure.
The video of President Bush holding hands with Michelle Obama. and President Bush...
And his wife on the other side.
But President Bush is just out dancing him.
She's looking over like, what are you going on here?
He's stinging Battle Hymn of the Republic, and President Bush is about to come out of his shoes. I don't know why. Maybe that's his favorite song or whatever, but he was just, of course, he delivered a speech there at the memorial service. But I told somebody, when was the last time a white man had to get a black woman some soul?
That email was sent around, and I answered
it. Michelle looked very uncomfortable, and then she finally started laughing about it.
I said in answer to that comment, I'm still looking to see. I don't see much soul in George Bush when he was dancing. Now, he's moving a little bit.
I'm just
bit,
saying by comparison, Michelle Obama was stiff.
It was a memorial service.
I know. I know.
Was looking at George W. Bush, and I was going, what are you doing, man?
Got to have a little levity, I guess, even in sad times. But I just it is go watch it yourself, folks.
He may just like to worship God.
Somebody said he may just be he may just be a happy person.
I just want to worship God.
Right, and they're singing a song that is very soulful.
Yeah.
You know, the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And
right.
So.
And he lives in Dallas and is really, I think in some respects, really love the fact that he doesn't have the pressure of the office of presidency on top of him. And he's been real lighthearted and fun-loving. And you can run into him different times, and he's just having a great time and really enjoying his experience. So that's probably part of it, too.
Yeah, and that's the way he was. That's his personality before he became president.
Sure.
From people who know him.
It is taxing. I looked at him, and I said, wow, he looks old. But then President Obama has aged a lot.
They all get gray hair.
That's it's a crushing
responsibility. But they sign up for it.
Yeah. I wonder if you're halfway through, you go, what was I thinking?
Well, President Obama said the main thing he misses is his anonymity.
Yeah.
He can't go anywhere for the rest of your life.
Right.
You won't be able to just go walking on the beach by yourself or anything like that.
Shoot down to the grocery
store.
You're
going to have to have men with things in your ears looking around with black suits and ties on for the rest of your life if you're a president. But again, you volunteer for it. And speaking of which, we have a gentleman who I don't know why he volunteered for it, but Donald Trump had a pretty good gig before he decided to run for president.
It's true,
huh?
He wasn't exactly anonymous either.
No, he wasn't anonymous, but I mean, he was just basically a celebrity,
and he wasn't hated like he is now.
Right,
you run
right,
for president,
right.
One side of the political aisle is going to hate your guts.
Right. Why do you think Donald Trump ran for president, Kirby?
Well, you know, he's been talking about that for some time, but on the positive side, you can say that he really wants to make America great again, and he really does have a sense of that. But, you know, let's face it, anybody that runs for the high office also does it for ego reasons, so I think there's a little bit of both. And if nothing else, it gives him something to talk about back and forth with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So that's, you know, giving him something to do as well.
He's 69 years old, though, right, Trump?
Yeah,
I think that's true.
He's 70 now, turned 70.
Hey, when is he going to pick his VP, and who's it going to be?
I think it's tomorrow, and I think it's going to be Mike Pence, but I could be wrong, and that's why we wait to see whether or not he's going to mix it up. But I think there's a good possibility in light of the fact that he traveled with Mike Pence on Tuesday. The family met Mike Pence, and frankly, you know, if you think about this, that's not so bad because, you know, Tim, you remember one of the Values Voter Summits a number of years ago that we were at, that's where the people actually selected Mike Pence as their nominee for president. And now, of course, he decided not to run for president, but in some respects, on a lot of issues, we would certainly agree with Mike Pence, wouldn't we?
Yeah, just for those who don't know, Governor Mike Pence is the is from Indiana.
Right.
He's a sitting governor in that state, and he's a former United States congressman. This is where he got, this is where he has laurels, if you will, from the conservative movement.
Right.
Because he was in Congress for a long time and was one of the leaders in the conservative movement. So that's why, that's.
He's
so
a solid Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. And family man.
Yeah.
And so he's brings that kind of stability and attraction, I think. I think he will be an attraction to conservative, pro-family type voters that many of whom, the kind of folks that listen to AFR, would appreciate his
right,
his story. So it's going to be interesting to see. That's tomorrow. He's supposed to make the announcement. The favorite is Mike Pence, according to Kirby. I agree with that, having watched the last couple of days. Newt Gingrich was thought maybe to be the guy. I thought Gingrich. Gingrich is extremely intelligent and
brilliant man.
Yeah, and Trump has said he will have some role in my administration should he be elected. Obviously, he have to be elected. But anyway,
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, also one of those that has the expectation was he very well could be the VP choice because Donald Trump has stated that he wants a fighter and.
Yeah, but do we need two New Jersey hotheads?
Yeah, I think Mike Pence would be the smartest. It would be different. I think you've got someone with experience at the federal level as well as the state level. Chris Christie's only been governor. You know, he's not been in Congress or anything. Kirby, let me ask you this. You know, the decision is supposed to be announced tomorrow at 11 a.m. in Manhattan, so I'm assuming that's Eastern time. I'm looking at a CNN story, so the assumption would be that's 11 a.m. Eastern. What do you think about the wisdom of announcing your vice presidential choice before the convention? The normal way this is done is after your candidate has been selected, you know, the next night is the introduction of the vice president. It gives you, you know, expectation. Now everyone's talking about going forward, who's the presidential candidate going to pick. This gives people several days before the convention to dissect and maybe criticize the choice.
Well, and again, I think there's some value in that because assuming that he's a good pick, and I think he is, but assuming, for example, for a moment that he's not, you might remember in 1972 you had Thomas Eagleton, who was put forward as a vice presidential nominee for George McGovern, and there was enough time to change that and select someone else. But that's one point. Number two, this is the most unorthodox politician I've seen in our lifetime.
That's
true.
So
it's not like he follows any of the rules, and so that's certainly part of it. And because of that, he's even talked about the idea of announcing some of his cabinet, which is even more unorthodox. But from a sheer political issue, you've got to recognize that with that decision that came down in Virginia just a few days ago that said that delegates don't necessarily have to be bound, at least some of them, this poses a problem because, again, back to the numbers we've talked about before, Donald Trump needs 1,237 number of delegates to vote for him. If you get to those that could be unbound, he's a little bit below that, and part of that has to do with some of these people that have the never Trump, no Trump kind of mindset. So if you have somebody that people would certainly agree with, and Mike Pence would certainly be in that category, maybe that causes the few delegates that decided that they might not be bound to Donald Trump to say, okay, I'm going to vote for him after all. And so there are just a lot of benefits, I think. The drawback, as you point out, is This gives the mainstream media, I would think they'd be the ones that'd be most likely to attack Mike Pence, a few extra days to attack the vice presidential nominee. And so there's a downside, but I think there's a lot of pluses to doing this.
Yeah, would you call I called Donald Trump and Chris Christie hotheads. Is that, have I been unfair?
I think that they seem hotheads.
To a New Yorker, they wouldn't necessarily. They would just be new, regular people.
Chris Christie seems more like I will ask Kirby, but Chris Christie seems more like a hothead to me. Donald Trump is just more shoot from the hip, I think.
Brash. Well, I guess what I mean by that, Chris Christie would probably, and he's come across as a very nice guy on many occasions. Chris Christie, I'm talking about the governor of New Jersey. I'm just saying to folks in the Midwest and in the South,
right?
The way that New Yorkers talk and deal with one another, and even New Jersey across the river, often seems just rude.
Well, let me just give a quick example.
So you make judgments about people being hotheads.
Let me give you a quick example, okay? Yeah. I probably 10 years ago, I'm sitting at a light in my hometown of Pontotoc, Mississippi, in the left turn, waiting to turn left. I'm not paying attention. The green arrow goes. It turns, red. And then the next light comes up. Meanwhile, there's 3 or 4 cars behind me. Nobody beeped their horn while I sat through an entire light, not paying attention. In Boston, where I grew up, or New Hampshire, you've got a fraction of a second when that arrow turns green. Yes, the horn starts. So that's the difference between the South and the North. So, well, at least one difference. Kirby, you go ahead.
Go ahead, Kirby.
Well, no, I agree with that. I mean, it is just hilarious to see that, and I've seen that having lived in both parts of the country, just like you. And I do believe that that's why you probably need a vice president that can really bring the attack, but to do it in a gracious way. And, Mike Pence, he started out in think tanks. He was a talk show host. Don't hold it against him. He was a TV show host and then became a member of Congress and a number of other things. So he brings the same kind of intellectual firepower as a Newt Gingrich. And so when you're talking about attacking Hillary Clinton or the vice presidential nominee that Hillary Clinton picks out, he can do that, and certainly Newt Gingrich can, but do it in a way that doesn't look mean-spirited, and that's going to be essential when you're talking about the first female candidate for president.
I like the idea. I hadn't thought about this. I like the idea of at the convention, assuming that, like you said, Donald Trump is the nominee, he's the presumptive nominee, of announcing cabinet members. I like that. I mean, Ben Carson's going to be my
team.
This is my team.
Everybody on board.
I think that what that does is it adds gravitas to Donald Trump. It makes it look like he's got himself a brain trust. People then begin to look at Donald Trump as the guy with this team with him. So I that could be a very good decision if they go ahead with that.
I agree. Totally agree.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Kirby Anderson joining us from Dallas. I'm Tim with Ed. We thank you for listening to American Family Radio. What's the website you got there, Kirby?
Well, again, probe.org. And, of course, people listen to Point of View. It'd be pointofview.net. Either one or both are great places to find great information.
What are you thinking about these polls the last couple of days? Of course, polls are going to be changing from now till November probably, but they're showing a real tight race between Clinton and Trump nationally. And, of course, even in the swing states, the Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Virginia, shows it extremely close.
Well, and this, again, comes from the Quinnipiac polls, which show that in these swing states, and we're, again, talking about places like Iowa, Pennsylvania and all the rest, we can go through the long list. These are frustrating, I suspect, for the Clinton campaign because the last numbers I heard spending, and I can't believe this is right, $500,000 a day on TV ads in these various places.
Who is?
And she's going down, not up. And these ads are all pretty much negative ads. Even the speech yesterday that Hillary Clinton gave at the State House in Illinois, in Springfield, was pretty much all just anti-Trump kind of things. And I think what it is that people aren't necessarily always excited about Donald Trump. I mean, he's maybe hit a ceiling, I don't know. But the issue is that people are becoming less and less convinced that you have honesty on the part of Hillary Clinton. And this is where Donald Trump, interesting enough, beats Hillary Clinton in all those swing states in terms of, do you believe the candidate is honest? Donald Trump's always at about 50%, and Hillary Clinton's anywhere from like 36 to 39, 40, but never even close to him. And so it's hurting her, and it's helping him. And so, again, if he can be competitive in those swing states and takes the ones that normally Republicans take, then we have the possibility of a Trump presidency.
You know, it's bad when one-third of Democrats think you should be indicted and you're their nominee for president.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing.
That's what I couldn't believe that.
Well, I have no other explanation for the fact that her polls, I won't say plummeted, but they have dropped her poll numbers since the decision by the Justice Department and the FBI not to recommend indictment. That seems to, whether it's long-lasting or not, I don't know, but that seems to really have struck many Americans the wrong way, enough Americans to have dropped Hillary in the polls. And this could reflect on what you're talking about, Kirby, that as she goes negative and runs all these ads, what the people watching these ads on television are thinking is, I don't believe anything you say because I think you're dishonest. I think you're crooked, and I think you should have been indicted. So why should I listen to what you, so that could be affecting the, you know, dropping the impact of those ads.
Sure.
Oh, she's got, oh, she, go ahead, Kirby.
I was just going to say, I think it's long-term because you're saying it may not last. But just think right now, if you know somebody right here in July and you say, I don't really trust this person, do you all of a sudden in November say, well, maybe I'll trust him after all?
Right.
Think about that.
Right.
If you lose a person's trust, it is really hard to get it back. And I don't see anything that Hillary Clinton is going to be able to do between now and November that's going to build up that trust back.
And Trump is not going to let her off the hook between now and November either. He's going to pound away on every one of these issues that's not only plagued her, but plagued her and Bill Clinton. And he's going to pound away. I don't know how much money he's got anymore, but he's going to pound.
Crooked Hillary?
Yeah. That's all you're going to hear from now to November. So she's not going to escape from under the shadow of that. The only question is, do people care enough about it to make it decisive when they go into the polls, to voting?
Well, Trump has been, you know, the interesting thing, and this is just my own personal observation, is if either the Democrats or the Republican had a more likable candidate, they'd probably be running away with it.
Right. I think you're right.
Huh?
Yeah.
But Trump nor Clinton are, Hillary
both
Clinton are.
High
are,
negatives.
They both have high negatives.
Right.
So it's kind of like, who's going to back into the presidency?
It's like your team losing 10 games in a row but still making the playoffs because the team they were competing with lost 11 in a row.
Yeah,
you know, that's how you back into
exactly.
the playoffs. You can back into the presidency, into the White House, I guess.
You know, Kirby, in all seriousness, with this election, the Supreme Court hangs in the balance for a generation. Now, this is what I've said before, and this, I mean, this is for everybody knows this. And I think Donald Trump's one of his main appeals to at least social conservatives who don't necessarily who haven't necessarily been fans of his heretofore is this what he says. Donald Trump says, I will appoint conservative, constitutional respecting candidates. He, in New York City, when I was there for the meeting with him, he said pro-life. So he's already released a list of that's unprecedented as far as I know, releasing a list of judges he would pick from for the public to scrutinize and see, especially for the left. So I think on that particular case, he's all in. Now, as I told a group of people the other night, he may be lying to our face. You know, and I've never been lied to by a politician. It would be the first time I've ever experienced that.
I'm shocked
that gambling's going on. Anyway, but I think he's put himself out there on this one, and this is a big deal. I'm talking about Trump and the Supreme Court. Not only the Supreme Court, but federal judges as well. Don't you think that that was a big plus for him among conservatives and Christian conservatives?
Two things. Number one, you said, and mentioned it, in fact, he said pro-life judges. I can't even remember Ronald Reagan saying that or George W. Bush. Usually they use some kind of code language, you know, a strict constructionist, constitutionalist. You know, he comes right out and says, no, we're going to have pro-life judges. But then the second thing is when asked by Kelly Shackelford, you know, well, how are you going to vet those? And he mentioned two organizations, the Federalist Society and the American Heritage Foundation, I should say. And I'm thinking, I've never heard anybody say that either. And and even think about this. Even if you start with the assumption maybe he's not telling the whole truth, he's got to go somewhere to vet these judges. He doesn't live in that world. And so if the place he is going to go are the places we would send people, I think that's good.
Yeah, I think it's good, too. Very good. I think I give him excellent marks for that. I will say this. If a Republican Senate is maintained and Donald Trump is elected president, he will get the judges that he wants.
I would think so.
On the Supreme Court. So, I mean, it's very, he's saying something that's very, I don't know what the chances are the Republicans maintain the Senate. I would think pretty good. They got a what, 7-8 vote difference there. He's put himself out there trying, and I'm sure Hillary Clinton will come after him on that, you know, saying, you know, he's going to end civil rights for most all Americans and all these things that she will come after him. But
he's going to kill your dog.
That's what she will say. Anyway, we'll see what happens. But if who do you think that Hillary Clinton will pick for her vice president?
Well, a lot of people thought it was Julian Castro, but then, of course, you've seen Elizabeth Warren.
Fidel Castro. What'd you say?
Julian Castro. The San Antonio mayor? Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but anyway. But the other one that a lot of people have been talking about, which surprises me, is Elizabeth Warren, which is really intriguing because if you look at the Democratic platform, which has come out now, you know, it is so much more liberal than it was in 2012, simply because of all the Bernie Sanders delegates. So she is, you know, she keeps wanting to move to the center, but if you had Elizabeth Warren as your VP and you have to run on this Democratic platform, you are about as far left as anything we've ever seen in American history.
Well, and after the break, we're going to look at some of those changes in the Democratic platform. You're right. They're shocking. There's no way Hillary Clinton can run to the center. I don't think she can. She can't move to the center. It's almost like you've made your bed, now sleep in it. You know, she's got to get those Bernie Sanders supporters to the polls to vote for her. Most of them are heartbroken and feel betrayed by Bernie Sanders' endorsement of Hillary Clinton. But I don't see how she moves to the center. You know, the fact, if she had picked Castro, this San Antonio mayor, can you imagine you're going to have just the name Castro? I'm sorry if it's baggage for this guy, but you're going to have a extremely liberal Democratic, socialist Democratic platform, basically a liberal near socialist in Hillary Clinton, and a running mate with the last name Castro. I mean, that's a lot to dig out from under when you're trying to convince a lot of independents.
All right, we got to take a break right here on today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Want to talk some more to Kirby Anderson? I want to talk about the situation that exists between the police in our country and the black community. We'll see what we can talk about that may be productive on that subject. And then other things coming up here on the program. So, a lot more to discuss with Kirby Anderson. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
Thank you. I think I've got a stumper for you this week.
Trivia Friday. You know you laugh, and you know you always learn something.
What vegetable did an ancient Egyptian place his right hand when taking an oath?
Yeah, it's funny now. But put yourself in my place.
That funny, Jim?
It is.
But listen to the question.
Trivia Friday. You'll want to tune in. 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. I'm packing my bags for the Republican National Convention, folks, hoping I can expense my body armor and gas mask. The big question is whether there will be more of a fight inside or outside the convention hall. Will Never Trump Republicans stage a coup and unbind delegates pledged to Donald Trump? Will anarchists cause mayhem in the streets of Cleveland? Lots of rumors and rumblings, but nothing of substance on those questions just yet. One great unknown is Donald Trump's running mate, set to be announced tomorrow, Mike Pence, believed to be the odds-on favorite. The RNC also released a list of speakers for the convention, including Rudy Giuliani, Mike Huckabee, and Jerry Falwell Jr., the president of Liberty University. And my Fox News colleague, John Roberts, reports exclusively that Tim Tebow will also be a speaker. An announcement sure to please Republicans of the evangelical Christian variety. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. You can listen to us on the internet 24/7 at the website afr.net. We also archive our shows there. You can listen to our shows there. We podcast our shows on American Family Radio, and you can download download the app from the App Store on your cell phone or your iPad or your other electronic mobile device. And listen to American Family Radio clear as a bell over the internet 24/7 on your cell phone or your iPad or anything like that. So take advantage of that. Thousands and thousands of people are tuning in to us on the apps. Kirby Anderson joining us from Dallas. We were talking about Donald Trump probably going to pick Governor Mike Pence of Indiana to be his running mate. Although that won't be certain until tomorrow when he makes the announcement in New York. Hillary Clinton may select the mayor of San Antonio. What's the gentleman's name?
I forget. What's his first name, Kirby?
Julian.
Julian?
Yeah.
Julian Castro.
Or Elizabeth Warren.
Or Elizabeth. Oh, that'll be a doozy.
What about Bernie Sanders? Any chance she picks Bernie Sanders?
Oh, my word. Please say no.
I don't know.
Oh, I can't listen to that.
Elizabeth Warren.
I'd rather listen to
Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, though, are cut from the same cloth, I think, ideologically.
Yeah. Pocahontas?
Yeah. Yes, she claimed to be part Native American.
That's what Donald Trump calls her.
They still voted for her in Massachusetts.
She claimed to be what now?
She claimed to be part Native American. Oh, remember, yeah. And then that was found out to be wrong. She got into Harvard.
Well, maybe she needs to get on Ancestry.com.
Well, I think she got into Harvard, if I'm not mistaken. By
you can find out what you are. You just go to Ancestry.com. You think you're German? You turn out you're Angolan. That's that can be found out easily.
Huh? Well, the, if it's that shocking, I don't want to know. I like being half Italian and half Greek.
Well, you know where you
I don't
want to
find
from.
Out I'm part Irish, you know, or what, part Ukrainian, or
you know where your pasta comes from.
That's right. Which side right. my pasta is
buttered on?
Yeah.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. The Democratic Party of yesteryear is gone, and probably gone forever. Democrat Party platform, Kirby, Ed was citing the Wall Street Journal critique of it, is how would you, how Ed, no, give us some examples, Ed, why I'm saying this is so far left.
Yeah, this is a
gun control, all of it. It's amazing.
It's the difference is that this article is pointing out the difference between the 2012 and the 2016 platform. This one is the core narrative, the Wall Street Journal says, is inequality, the injustice that inequality entails, and the need to rectify it through redistribution. It talks a lot about that in this article, but then it talks about the new draft of the party platform for the Democrats and its intensified social liberalism. It will demand for the first time ever the abolition of the death penalty. It strips away from the 2012 platform any statement which states that Americans have a right to, Second Amendment right to own and bear firearms. There's no reference to that right in this new platform language. And also, pretty, not surprisingly, but still shocking, in 2012, the Democratic Party platform called for constitutionally sound partnerships between the government and faith-based institutions, stating there is no conflict between supporting faith-based institutions and respecting our Constitution. That language has also been stripped away. Kirby, what do you make of this? This is a no-holds-barred march to a secular socialist utopia, isn't it?
Sure. And the piece you're quoting from comes from William Galston, who actually served in Bill Clinton's administration. So this is a Democrat saying this and basically saying that the party that Hillary Clinton's going to lead in 2016 is not the party that Bill Clinton led in 1992. And I think we all know this. Tim, you can think about all the pro-life conservative Democrats that used to exist, you know, whether it's Scoop Jackson or Sam Nunn or, you know, you can go down this long list. Phil Graham was a Democrat for a while. And none of those exist anymore. They've been, in a sense, almost driven out of the party. So as a result, a party that was already very liberal when Barack Obama came into office in 2008, because so many of them have lost elections and because there's been such an emphasis by the Nancy Pelosi's and others to continue to move to the left, and then because of the constant drumbeat from Bernie Sanders, this party is more liberal and the platform is more liberal than it was 4 years ago, much more liberal than it was 8 years ago. And I think if that begins to resonate with the American voters, it does not bode well for Hillary Clinton this fall.
I think 4 years from now, they might be holding their Democrat National Convention in Stockholm.
Havana.
Or Havana or Moscow or something. This is a
guy by the name of Castro.
You know, you're right. This is the Democrat Party. You know, the thing about it is that they represent half the country. Now, I don't think the elites necessarily or the delegates maybe who control the Democratic Party are completely representative of the Democrat Party nationally. I'm just saying that you mentioned that they have
you're talking in terms of voters.
They've purged themselves of moderates.
Right.
All right. There's no – Paul Ryan was talking about this the other night. I watched a town hall meeting he held on CNN, and he said – he made a good point. He said, you know, they're asking him, as Speaker of the House, can't you work together with the Democrats to get some things done? And he said, well, I'd like to, but this isn't Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan anymore.
Right.
As Kirby was talking about, there's no, in the 80s, the 90s even, there was a lot of crossover in the House of Representatives and in the Senate between there were a lot of people, a lot of moderates, you would call them, if that's what you want to call them. They could work together on some issues. Today, no longer, because the Democrat Party today, they believe in, to quote President Barack Obama, fundamentally transforming America. Well, the Republican Party is voted, people who vote for Republicans today resist that notion altogether.
Right.
And so they don't, people who vote for Republicans and send them to Washington don't want them working with Democrats for anything.
Right.
Because the they view the Democrats as wanting to destroy the country.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So there's no, that's what Paul Ryan was saying. There's no common ground here anymore. It's just, this is just the new normal. It's how it's going to be. Kirby, what do you think about that?
Well, again, let's just see what's happening in the state legislatures and the governor's races. We have more and more Republican governors,
right,
more and more Republican legislatures. Just to show you the remarkable change, I think almost all of our listeners would know who Rick Perry is. He was the governor,
right,
of the state of Texas and twice ran for the presidency. Go back to 1988. He was a Democrat that worked on Al Gore's campaign. If
wow,
that helps you understand that there was a time not so long ago, and Tim, you grew up in Mississippi, you know how oftentimes you and your dad probably would vote for Democrats, but back then when you,
right,
voted for a Democrat, it was probably a lot like a Republican. And there used to be a time, if you were to go back, say, the 1960 Republican convention and the Democratic convention, I bet you could put the two platforms on top of each other,
right,
Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy, and I don't think you would be able to tell which one was the Republican, which was the Democrat. But by 1972, with George McGovern, then sort of locked into place, everybody that was a Democrat was a liberal, and they began to purge the party. And really, by 1980, with the election of Ronald Reagan, that really established that was for sure the conservative party. But back in the 60s, I remember, you had very conservative Democrats, like I mentioned just a minute ago. You had some fairly liberal Republicans like Nelson Rockefeller. But now, those two parties are so different, and the party platforms are so different, that if we can just get the information out to the listeners to American Family Radio, and they can get that out to their friends and sphere of influence, a lot of people will just say, whoa, this something has changed dramatically in the Democratic Party. And that's what I think is going to be the functional foundation for Hillary Clinton actually governing the next 4 years if she's elected.
Well, I was going to say, I think the reason you could do that with those platforms back in 1960, is that there were still at that time a number of core beliefs that all Americans shared. And I think what's happened is not only have the two parties split, not only are they polarized, but they have mutually exclusive views of the world. My personal opinion is neither party has the right to enforce its own agenda at 51% to 49%. I mean, if you are going to try to say, like the Democrats generally do, we're going to fundamentally change America because we have 51%, you only have 49%, you are setting the groundwork for either a hot or a cold civil war, because you can't have 51% of the people and say, we're going to fundamentally change. You're going to get so much pushback. And I think that's part of what has undermined President Obama's his two administrations. Is he said he didn't lie about it. He said we're going to fundamentally change the country, but you can't do that with just 51% of the vote. You're just dealing with too much resistance on the other side.
And again, I think that we have to recognize that there is that division, but the difference is that even still in the Republican Party, it's still more of an open tent. It's a little bit,
right,
bigger tent. There are Republicans that aren't pro-life and exist within the party. There is even a big issue right now as to whether or not the LGBT kind of ideas might be snuck into the platform for the Republican side. I doubt that's the case. But it is impossible now, really, to be a pro-life Democrat. It's almost impossible to be a Democrat that's in any position in leadership that says marriage is between one man and one woman.
Right.
So, whereas on the left, it is locked in and we don't tolerate any dissension, there's still a little bit more of a broader,
yeah,
tent in the Republican Party in ways that sometimes we don't always like, but is nevertheless the case.
I want to talk about the situation that exists now between some in the African-American community and the police across the country, Kirby. We've seen what's happened, and of course, you were in Dallas. The 4-5 police officers shot and killed last week, and at a Black Lives Matter rally. Now, it was a lone gunman, as they say, a terrorist, if you will. It wasn't a Black Lives Matter organizer, but the I have a pessimistic view about this, and I wish I didn't have this view that I'm about to express. And maybe you can correct me, Kirby, or disagree. Ed, feel free.
I'm going to agree, but go ahead.
Okay, this is not going to get better anytime soon, because here's the reason: you have an extraordinarily high percentage of crime done by young Black males. The statistics we all know. In fact, the leading cause of death among Black males ages 15 to 34 is homicide. It's a very tragic place for a lot of these young Black males to be, and they're committing a lot of crime.
That's the number one cause of death? That age group? Wow.
15
homicide.
The 15 years old to 34 year old in the Black community, the leading cause of death is murder. That is a fact. Juan Williams pointed this out.
Yeah.
He's an African-American commentator on the Fox News channel. And that's a sad, tragic fact. But here's why I say I don't see how this is going to improve anytime soon. I think is because so you have police officers in constant daily conflict with these young Black males on the streets of America. All right? Cops are sent into dangerous areas where a lot of criminal activity exists, and those are a lot of times the inner cities of our country, for example. All right, it's just a matter of time before something's going to go wrong. And what you're having, too, is you're having a lot of these guys are resisting arrest. They're ignoring what the cops tell them to do. Now, that's what happened in Baton Rouge, evidently. However that case turns out, I'm just saying, when you have people resisting arrest or they feel like they're being discriminated against or picked on and they flip the cops the bird, then the cops have a choice. Do I get into a physical altercation with this young man, or do I get in my cruiser and drive away? And I think that what they're going to do is get in their cruiser and drive away from now on, for the most part. Or you can get into a physical altercation. Here comes the cell phone. Here comes the cop slamming the Black kid to the concrete, breaks his neck. He's in the hospital. Now here comes the civil rights demonstrators. Look at this white cop slamming this Black kid to the concrete. Well, it doesn't show you. So I'm just saying, those kinds of scenarios, which was a made-up one I just created. I told somebody yesterday, what do you do if you're a white police officer? You're called to the mall. You've got three Black young men loitering in the parking lot. And maybe they're interfering with traffic, or I don't know what. And the cop goes, you're going to have to move on, gentlemen. Get out of here. And the kid says something vulgar or obscene back to the cop. Okay, or just ignores him. The cop then says, did you hear me? And the kids continue to ignore him, or they, you know, do something worse. The cop has this is happening all over the country every day, all day. Okay, don't miss it. So at that point, what's the officer supposed to do? He can either move on, you know, just say, I'm not going to risk my life over this. Okay, somebody else can come do it. He probably at that point should resign as an officer. So those kinds of scenarios are happening all over America every day. So it's going to be a few more days from now, and you're going to see another incident like Baton Rouge in Minnesota on TV, like Trayvon Martin, like Michael Brown, like, what was it, Freddie Gray. That's going to be next week, and then the week after that, and it's going to be the week after that. Showing white people shot by cops is not sexy. Doesn't get TV ratings, doesn't get people stirred up, even though it happens more than blacks. Right. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't see this improving anytime soon. I hope and pray it doesn't lead to a race war. But unless you're going to tell cops, don't confront young black males, because what could happen would be worse than if you do. You see what I'm saying? I don't see any resolution to this.
Well, now Kirby, go ahead. I'm gonna wait and give my opinion. Kirby,
go ahead.
Give us a more optimistic picture.
Tell me where I'm wrong, as Bill O'Reilly would say.
I hate to say it, because you know we've interviewed Heather McDonald, and of course she wrote the book The War on Cops, and it's kind of becoming a bestseller now because of it. But she pointed out, first of all, what's called the Ferguson effect, and ever since Ferguson, Missouri, the Ferguson effect is number one. You have police officers that are no longer doing proactive policing. In other words, they're not going into the community to try to prevent crime. They're waiting till you get a 911 call. So that's issue number one. Already you're going to see the crime rates increasing, and they have. Number two, because of this latest shooting, you now are having more and more police officers going two by two in a car. So that means the response time is longer, and the number of cases they can take in some cases is cut by half. So you have all of that. But then back to your point of Tim, we also have this research that's just come out from Harvard University, Dr. Roland Fryer, who's an African-American, by the way, and very well respected. But he has found, first of all, on the one hand, that indeed there is no racial bias in these shootings. But what he has found is that in many areas, and I'll just use Houston as an example, that a white officer is 20% less likely to shoot or even to confront a suspect if he is black because of that so-called Ferguson effect. So you can figure this out. It's just going to tell us that sooner rather than later, the crime rate is going to go up. And then, as you say, Tim, when they do actually intervene, sooner or later, there's going to be another case, just like we've been hearing about over the last couple of weeks from Baton Rouge and from Minnesota,
well,
because it's just inevitable.
I'll be careful about how I say this. I think it's unfair. A lot of the perception, on these cases are made, and the reaction is made within 24, 48 hours, and then you have a fixed opinion of what happened.
Regardless of the truth.
Well, I don't think for a lot. I've come to the conclusion again that a lot of people, the truth doesn't matter.
Well, see, that's my point. The reason I'm also pessimistic
about the specific case,
right?
In other words, the truth. It appears in Baton Rouge, and I haven't studied this in great detail, but it appears in Baton Rouge with the young man there that came in contact with the cops. Somebody called the police and said a man is brandishing a gun.
Right. Out front of a convenience store
because. The story was that a homeless man had approached, is it Sterling? Sterling?
Yes.
The black man that was shot and killed.
Alton.
Okay, Sterling. Well, and so he flashed this gun, and somebody called the police. The homeless man was told by Sterling to leave him alone. So somebody calls the cops. The cops show up. And they know he's got a gun. He doesn't obey what they tell him to do, right? You got the story right so far?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Yeah.
He doesn't obey the police commands. Then they tase him, and it doesn't faze him enough. Then they get into get into a fight with him. They're on the ground. Somebody says he has a gun, and then he gets shot.
Well, the reason I'm also
let me finish.
Okay.
Excuse me. The point of bringing that up is, and I may not have all the facts right there. Nobody waits to see if what I've just described just happened, and what is the point of view of the cops? It's that the video shows two white cops in a fight with a black guy on the ground, and they shoot him dead. And that fits into cops are hunting down black men. And when somebody believes that, you can't change their mind, no matter what the facts of the particular case was. Go ahead.
Right. Well, I was going to say the reason I'm also pessimistic is not because I think there are plenty of leaders in the black community, pastors and so on and so forth, who want to try to calm everybody's fears and get a dialogue, all that kind of, I think that exists. But I don't think that's what's behind Black Lives Matter and some of this. I think that there are radical groups that are using, they're opportunistic, that are using these kinds of incidences to try to radicalize the minority community in this country to serve their purposes of radically altering America. George Soros kind of money, that's what I think is behind this. I think it's the same thing that was behind Occupy Wall Street, which was not primarily a black protest. In fact, I think it was primarily white protest. I think there are radical groups that are opportunistic using these kinds of things to pull America apart so they can be the ones left standing. Kirby, am I just paranoid?
No, there's all sorts of books out that have addressed that issue as well. And again, it stirs up the community. And just to give you a feel for that, one of the callers to my show this week called in and said, you know, I am not opposed to what the killer in Dallas did. I think he's a freedom fighter. And this African-American caller was saying, you know, the problem we have in the black community, and this is what he's saying, is that we, you know, have a shooting, we go down to City Hall, and we hold hands, and we sing We Shall Overcome, but nothing happens. And he said, this is the only way we're going to get your attention. We just need to kill more officers so that we can really bring about the kind of change we want to bring about. Well, that's one of the callers to my program, and I think he represents a fairly significant number of individuals that are convinced that what we need are race wars. And as Tim said, we don't want to have one, but if you listen to some of the people that even call into my program and others that are making comments on all of these blogs and social media, you can recognize there's just enough people to really try to foment some of this.
Well, you know, what a lot of people don't understand when they let their emotions run riot, and people can do that on both sides, is everyone says, yeah, let's just settle this once and for all. You know who loses when that happens? Innocent people. Innocent people get shot. Innocent people get killed. Dallas cops who have done nothing to harm the minority community, they get victimized. This is what the devil wants in trying to cause Americans to devour one another. And that's what happens. You may say that this change is going to happen, that change is going to happen.
But what if you showed, every time there was a cop shot a white guy, what if you showed that on TV? Then you would be saying, oh my word, the cops are gunning down white guys. Am I right?
I've mentioned this before on the program over the last several years, as I've been a little bit alarmed at the militarization of the police force in America, where they are buying military grade equipment. And I'm saying, well, what do they need this? What do they need armored personnel carriers for? What do they need all this kind of equipment? The suspicion in my mind began to grow. I began to think, would the police ever turn? Would they ever turn on the American people and be used as instruments of oppression? That kind of suspicion can grow pretty quickly, when you're wondering what the people.
Yeah,
on the other
but
side
I'm just telling you, police. You know what they do? They go to their locker room, they change clothes, and they go play softball.
Right.
Or they go to their kid's game. They're people just like us.
Right.
So they're not. This isn't communist China, or where they're used in a military
right.
fashion. I understand what you're saying, but about the use of military garb. But to protect themselves, if you're being shot at, you need all the armor
right.
you can get. Kirby, thanks so much for being here with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Kirby Anderson.
Thanks, Kirby.
Joining us from Dallas. We'll be back after this timeout for news. Stay with us. You're listening to American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.